This is a sonic scrapbook, a passport to Rome, following a pull to tune into the pulse of place, to get closer to the ground, befriending strangers along the way. I'm Petra Barron, and this is Lowlines. Episode 5, Plotlines. Aztec permaculture, Xochimilco, Mexico City.
Now, the Mexican engineer believed that the Mexico can be domed, collapsed, can be absorbed.
They think that the original lake, which is still underneath us, is going to take it. The city is going to collapse and be taken back by the lake.
Because we need the water.
When do they think that's going to happen?
We don't believe, because when we had the earthquake, Mexico is very dangerous.
So Mexico City is massively on the wonk. It's got 23 million people weighing down on what was once a lake, and it's sinking at a rate faster than any other city on Earth. Something like 20 inches a year, apparently.
And do you feel here like a gelatin? And many people cry here because you can feel how the buildings are creaking.
Before the Spanish conquistadors stormed in the 1500s, this was Tenochtitlan. It was this thriving, fertile metropolis that had designed agricultural systems that worked with the lake. The Aztecs were tuned into the land they lived on and had a solution that managed the land and the water. And they fed this growing city by creating these fertile, volcanic, soil-filled floating gardens, allotment-style beds called chinampas.
There's lots of chinampas as we're leaving town, which are, help steer a bit. Yeah, instead of the wooden posts and the willows, it's metal posts and a lot of corrugated iron. I think that's the sort of urban version of the chinampa.
Most of the original chinampas are gone now, but south of the city, in Xochimilco, there are still some left. Except the focus over the years has become less on the permaculture and more on the party boats that cruise around the canals.
Oh, that's really nice. They're going off on a jolly. They've got a band with them.
Ever since I heard about the chinampas, this incredible, enduring example of Aztec engineering from hundreds of years ago, I just wanted to learn more.
And people think, oh, that's the thing. You get on a boat, go down the river with your friends, and get drunk.
And that's the difficult part of the project. Let's understand that we're in a national park, a natural reserve. It's a pre-Hispanic and prehistorical center. It refers to the humans in the evolution point where we decide to change from nomads to agricultural people.
Victor's the hype man of an agroecological community called Arca Tierra. They're reviving the chinampas by using Aztec growing techniques and are now supplying the city's hottest restaurants with the produce.
And this is what really attracts me to this story, is that it's the ancient agricultural systems of the Aztecs upon which the city of Tenochtitlan was able to become as strong as it was for then to be so powerful.
It's
everything.
It's impossible to imagine the creation of a building without an architect or a person who imagined all that thing. It's impossible to have that imagination without food. It's impossible to build an empire without food. It's impossible to have an army without food. It's impossible to think about all the civilization that happened around here without this food, without the processes of humans happening here.
Yeah.
The idea and the concept of agriculture, water, understanding not just in the mythological way, but in the practice.
Yeah.
This is pre-Hispanic, pre-historical, pre-everything. No, it refers to the most essential human we can find in ourselves. That's why it's so important and so universal. It doesn't matter where you're coming from. Mexico City, England, or Namibia. When you arrive here, you refer to this as yours, as part of something you have in yourself, which is the connection with the humans.
It's food.
Estos son, ellos son mariachi.
Victor told me that the quality of the food grown from this volcanic soil in the Chinampas was legendary. But in true colonial style, the Europeans drained the lake and paved over all that lushness with that domineering, rationalizing mindset. They say it was the most drastic reordering of nature that any city has ever carried out. But Victor and his team are part of the new generation on a mission to restore as much of that soil as possible. And they're doing so well that there's rumours of a chef in Mexico City so juiced by the soil that he gets his face in it and eats it. So of course I had to see it for myself.
We've shut off the motor. I can hear this organ playing. And Gamaliel is trying to steer us so we don't go too far, of course, rowing with a broom. And in the distance, on the horizon, is the volcano of the woman who sleeps down in Puebla. Jaltocan, La Laguna de Jaltocan. There's some incredible looking houses along here. Like, they look like sort of Sylvanian families or Fisher Price houses or something. These red roofs, these red sort of barn roofs, and the windows with the eaves. Now we're coming out into the big, wide open space, but it's still pretty urban. It's literally, yeah, a lot of concrete blocks, breeze blocks. There's walls made out of plastic crates. Yeah, a lot of chicken wire fencing, a lot of corrugated iron, a lot of concrete, and a lot of metal stakes amongst the lily pads and the palm trees and the willows. Oops. Wasn't able to avoid it, I guess. There's a big old tree here. ¿Qué tipo de árboles?
Este es de los abinos.
A lot of this stuff looks really English. It's because of all the willows. There's so many willows. Sabinos. Esperamos a alguien.
Sí, al que va a mover el puente.
Sí.
El operador.
Waiting for the lockman. Lockman's gone MIA.
And then I got dropped off at the Muelle, the dock, to meet up with Lucio Usobiaga, the permaculturalist, philosopher, and gatherer of people behind Arcatierra. He's deep and serious and hyper-focused. He's a man on a mission. He didn't waste any time in taking me to the first Chinampa, which is like this perfect rectangle of land, fringed all the way round with juniper and willow trees, and full of all these different beds bursting with vegetables, all grown the Aztec way.
That was the first Chinampa we worked. And this one is the Chinampa that looks like the original design. It resembles the most the original design. Because it's not very wide, surrounded by these trees that are the willows, sacred trees from here, surrounded by water and by the willows. You can see the soil is extremely rich.
And really hard. I mean, this is almost like volcanic rock or something.
That's because of the salt, but look at the color.
Black.
This tells you how much organic matter we have.
Well, do you say, Lucio, that the darker the soil, the more organic matter it contains?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Now in the Amazon, there are these places called Terra Prieta de Indios. It's an indigenous technique. These spots in the Amazon of black soil. and those are all man-made. The Amazon was managed, was designed, not very big parts of it, by the communities.
So what are you growing here, Lucia?
We have beetroot, we have cauliflower, we have sorrel, spinach. We are working 6 chinampas, a bit more than a hectare, but our aim is not to work all the chinampas. No, it's like to be a school, like an experimental site. Also production, it has to self-maintain. Buenos días.
Buenos días.
¿Cómo van, Gabriel?
Bien,
mira. ¿Sí? So that's just like what we call here barbechar. It's like tilling, preparing the beds. That helps us with fertility, nutrition. We had fennel, beet, and cauliflower. Different cycles of plants. Like once we harvest all the beet, then the cauliflower is gonna be starting to flower. So we play with the space and with the time of the crops. It's having different crops of different time cycles. Also the reason behind it is that they create a microclimate that keeps moisture and also prevents many weeds from growing. And some people say that plants also communicate with each other, no? And also for pests, plague control, sorry, it's more difficult for an insect that will eat a crop to have a feast on the crop if you have coriander and fennel and cauliflower, because they probably only like one. This is really interesting. The more an insect has to move from a place to place, the more risk they take of being eaten, no? If you have a monoculture, like just one crop, they will see like a table set with an enormous feast and they will just eat everything. This is my favorite chinampa, no, in terms of design. It's really beautiful. I mean, I love that it respects the design, and the design itself is beautiful. It's like an amazing combination of nature and human design. Surrounded by the trees, by the water, the big canal, the small canal.
So on one side we've got the main artery, and then we've got some smaller vein to the side. So before you guys came along, what was going on these chinampas?
This was abandoned, and that was farmed conventionally. The owner there died, and his son rented it to me. And then this one is from this guy's cousin. For the first time we've been able to rent it.
How long have they had it in their family?
Oof, many, many years. It's many generations of farmers.
The worms.
Yeah,
is an old boat.
Yes.
Okay.
It's an old boat. We bought the worms.
As we talked, we took the boat between chinampas, just marvelling at the abundance of it all and getting into the numbers. Me trying to get my head around how many of them were left, how they were being used, just how does it even all work.
And what percentage of the chinampas are used for growing vegetables?
We have 2,200 hectares. 20% of that area are being farmed. Most of it conventional farming. Then we have another 20% that has already been urbanized, like the urban sprawl has grown on top of the chinampas.
They build houses on top of chinampas?
Yes. Even if this is a natural protected area, a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
People just go ahead and do land
grab. That happens. No?
Yeah.
And the other 60% is just abandoned land. Like, as you can see here, nobody's working these chinampas. They're just wild, yeah.
This is all cleared. So you could have like one guy, one campesino with a small chinampa, and he's got it in his family, and it's like an allotment in the UK.
Yeah, it's like an allotment, yeah. They come from the neighborhood, they work their chinampas. The generation that was working, they told their children, like, stop working the chinampas, there's no future. Now, the youngest Xochimilcan farmer I know is 36 years old. There are no new chinampas. there are many people coming from other parts of Mexico. I mean, people from indigenous regions and from rural regions. In their communities, there is no work. So they migrate to the city. And so these are the people that are working the chinampas.
Who pays them?
They sell in the local market or in the big market, Central de Abastos, because they produce like a considerable quantity of certain crops.
Part of Arcatiera's strategy is to be the go-to veg supplier to the city's top restaurants. I think back to the story of Lalo Garcia, that soil-eating chef. We got onto the subject of curb, which felt like a million miles away.
Your project for street food is really amazing.
I mean, it blows my mind.
It's like,
you know,
for entrepreneurs in...
Yeah, supporting them. Yes. So it's called Curb, so you know what the curb
is.
Yeah. I talk about it being a platform. I mean, it's a leveler. It's like we all belong on the street. Everyone's the same. Everyone deserves to eat good food. And it's a stage. So if I always think of all the different stalls as like stages, and you bring your story and you tell your story and people eat the story. And
how do you manage like the public spaces?
Most of our markets are on private property.
Yeah.
So we deal with the landlords. The first market we had was at King's Cross, on like the biggest redevelopment site in Europe. They wanted to change the narrative of the area, which was all about prostitution and drugs and raving. And they thought, let's bring food in and then create a new narrative. Let's put some street food with some personality and create a human space. At its heart, it's about independent food and people taking risks and people doing interesting stuff and serving food that's proper food. But you have to keep on compromising because it gets more and more expensive. And it's like, how do you put independent food in the space of capitalist London real estate? It doesn't work. There's got to be a compromise somewhere. You know,
it's like, what way do you compromise?
Say you're a business and you're like, oh my God, I've got this amazing idea. I'm going to make Filipino food like my grandmother used to make. And you start off with the best food. As time goes by, you're like, well, actually, first of all, I can't have this many different dishes. It's not commercial. That's fair enough. But actually, all anyone wants to eat is a burger or fried chicken. And actually, that chicken, if I really want to make money and pay rent and pay my team and blah, 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 I'm going to have to go for a lower quality chicken. And I'm generalizing, but that's how it works. It's hard because it can make you cynical.
London is very metropolitan.
And then we carried on down the water, motoring onto the main chinampa. Arcatiera HQ is where they cook and give talks and host events and all of that. And today it was a Mexican fashion magazine with drink sponsors and stacks of the magazine everywhere, and everything was gorgeous. There was this big natural table setting for this lovely farm-to-table lunch, and glamorous fashionistas strolling around, taking pictures amongst the milpa, and living out their pre-Hispanic bucolic fantasies.
And there's a little fire with some breeze blocks that created some glamorous looking people sitting around in their country gear, some sort of cowboy boots and fedoras, wicker handbags, white keyhole patterned shirts.
And I'm there in my Adidas slides and sock combo. My fingernails are like full of volcanic soil. Lovely. And everything's just busy, busy. And Victor and Lucio are doing their thing with the guests. And the kitchen's starting to smell really good. And it's sending out all these charred smells. So I gravitated in there.
Danny is mixing the most beautiful looking pot of arroz con leche con mango. And they're slicing beautiful, juicy-looking mango into little cubes that they're probably going to serve with it. And it looks really wonderful. Is it mango season?
Yes, right now. It's full season. And this?
In the kitchen, I met Danny and Santiago, and they run this brilliant catering company called Maíz Ajo. And they're part of this wave of restaurateurs emerging in Mexico City, focused on keeping indigenous culinary practices alive amidst this sort of encroaching, monocultural flattening of its food system.
For me, the best food in Ensenada. Like all the experience, the flavor, everything. And in Mexico City, we don't have that now.
It's become like, an international
city. It's really become, it's like...
Brooklynization.
Really much, because like 5 years ago, it wasn't like this. I like it, but we, as Mexicans, we need to see that, and we need to see which experience we want to go. Not only Japanese food, not only Asian food, because the best restaurants now here in Mexico City, for me, are the ones who have Asian food. Japanese, Thailand, you know?
But so you still feel like you need to be kind of pushing the dial because what you're doing is not that common in the city.
Yes. No, it's not that common and it's expensive.
For example, everyone
have to pay more.
Yes. Everyone eats corn here, you know? And for us, it's really difficult to get like the people understand why it's important to eat this type of corn.
And also the other tortillas are subsidized. So the government gives big company money where they can sell it at half our price. So if you actually remove that subsidy, the prices will be the same as ours. The only difference that the government has realized that tortilla is so important that they have to control the prices. The corn it's more than a gastronomy thing in Mexico. It's a cultural thing, it's a political thing, it's an economic thing. So we have to start realizing that food is beyond food. Like all the implications it has surrounding it and how Mexican governments are paying like 5-6 pesos per kilo of corn. That's not even livable on it. And it costs like 8 pesos to create 1 kilo of corn. So they're losing money.
Yeah.
And nobody cares. Like now they're wondering why we have so much immigration to the States. They don't even have money for themselves. It's not that it's not enough. It's that it's not making them any money. And if they do stay, they start doing practices that damage the soil and the water, and they're contaminating because they're using fertilizers and all this stuff that you have to use to plant hybrid corn. So it's a non-ending cycle of everything is wrong. So if you try to make money out of something that has a life, it's gonna end the life of others. It's hard. True. It's hard to understand that.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get that message out, like trying to make people understand why capitalism has been wrong all this time and what it's doing to us as normal people and farmers and people in the middle and everyone.
And the planet.
And the planet itself.
¿Necesitas más champiñón?
Ya tiene allá.
Entonces esto ya me lo llevo de aquí. ¿No?
Sí.
Llegan la gente.
Yeah.
¿Quién son? Who are they?
It's for a really posh magazine.
Yeah.
Really.
Really, really.
So it's an interesting contrast. It's positive.
Yeah, well, sort of. Because like most of them are wearing Gucci leather shoes and Louis Vuitton bags. And they all come from rich families, so they have a lot of money.
Do you think this is just a nice day on the farm for a lot of people?
Like that.
Eat a bit of rustic maize products.
And for free. This was free. Like, and we are doing this for free.
But Arcatiera gets paid?
No.
No? Oh, because it's the publicity.
Yeah.
So wait a minute. Are you being paid to be here? Okay, so this is one of those gigs that you do because it's going to give you exposure in the magazine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we try not to do it really much.
No, I get it. It's so difficult because you get promised the air. You never know who you're going to meet. You never know what conversation you're going to have. It's always an opportunity.
And also, the way I like to think about it is that maybe if someone listens, one of them listens, and they really care, they can do something about it.
So just wandering over to where Victor is. giving a bit of a talk to the guests.
Para mí el ecoturismo es una forma de expresión humana muy bonita.
My God, he was just in full flow. He's so well versed and practiced in breaking it down for all these visitors they get. It's like this mission and passion and laser-like vision that stretches so far beyond the challenges of the here and now. It's all the way back to these Aztec systems. I know I keep on saying it, but I fucking love their ingeniousness and how it's still being drawn from today and then modernized.
Everyone is talking about agriculture and permaculture and networking around it. It's part of our joy.
Of course it is, and they're also excited to see it. Victor, what would be your vision for what you can do here?
Well, first, learn about patience, learn about understanding civilizations in different processes, and then trying to convince to eat vegetables. My vision, I think, it's to transform the concept. I think somehow the generation that lived the pandemic are understanding the value of things, not just the price or the cost, the value of experiences like coming to the farms, experience of learning farm-to-table flavors. That generation is seeding also other ideas that will repercute in a bigger scale. Today we have like these cooks, right? They were part of a very important kitchen 10 years ago, so they learn about the value and the benefits of the organic food. So it's part of the way of living and working today. If for all of them, also in the next 10 years, the chefs or their guests change their habits of production or distribution or purchasing differently, we are winning. It's inception of ideas. We're sitting. Yeah. We're just sitting and sitting and sitting.
Obviously, we've got this big magazine here today. That's one way. What do you think
schools,
is the best way?
Schools, kids, families. The idea of the visit here, I mean, in my end, it's rural tourism, right? Bring them back, make them understanding all this environment. But I think the idea of changing our perspective on how we eat, what we eat, you know, the alimentary distribution. Yeah. You want to join the breakfast?
Joining La Arca Tierra involves what?
Well, passion for nature, that's one. Hope in humans, and try to be a little bit positive on what is happening today. Because when we think about climate change or agriculture and we see all the data, it can be very disappointing, discouraging, or simply like cynical about the future. No? But I think that involves to get hope, no? Like to feel that we are in the right side of the history. No?
And commercially speaking, so I'm a campesino. Here's Arca Tierra doing all this amazing productivity, supplying all these big restaurants. I love the nature. I love all of this. What am I going to get out of it commercially?
It work. First, benefits. No? You're going to see that your work gets the result you're expecting. No, because there's nothing more frustrating than producing and not selling. I mean, it's not just buying and selling. We distribute what they produce.
Yes.
So we are the link in that chain.
Yeah.
We are not the chain
the
owner.
Conduit.
Yes. We are like putting them in the chain as a link next to us.
Yes.
And next to another link.
Yes.
But we are not owners of the chain.
Sure.
So the idea is to give them the chance to be part of this, amplifying as much as possible. This is not copyright, it's copyleft, and it's copy-paste.
Copy like, left.
Yeah, this is copyleft.
I love it.
No, it's about being creative, trying to do as much as possible. I think we have one seat here and one seat in front.
Oh, perfecto.
Which one you want to take?
I'll go over there. Okay, gracias.
And I've just got to say that I may not have eaten soil that day, but I did get to eat a lot of that produce from Arca Tierra, and it was sensational. Maíz Ajo sent through all these delicious plates of like flautas with cabbage and tostadas with the beetroot, birria with cauliflower, normally it's with meat, and then the most sensational mango rice pudding, arroz con leche. Big thanks to everyone at Arca Tierra who so willingly let me roll with them for the day. Lucio and Victor, you are building something truly inspiring. to everyone in the kitchen that day, cooking up such deliciousness, and headed up by Danny and Santiago of Maíz Ajo, flying the flag for heritage corn in the land that corn originates from. And to Lionel and Noé, who took me all over the canalways of Xochimilco while I was there. Muchísimas gracias a todos. To go a bit deeper on the Arca Tierra project and discover more on corn in Mexico, head over to low-lines.com. Low Lines was created and recorded by me, Petra Barron, produced, edited, and sound designed by Lucia Scazzocchio at Social Broadcasts, and executive produced by Lena Presswood at Scenery Studios. The original score is by Hannah Marshall, with mixing by Yabina Tinnemans. The show artwork was created by David Mesher. Next time on Low Lines.
There's a lot of fantasy that comes here, thinking, yeah, I'm coming here, and when I leave, I'm going to just be the most polished piece of work. And so people come here for that. They come here thinking that they're just going through a car wash and that they're going to be polished. And then on the other side of that, it's like, great, you're clean, and in 10 feet, a bird's going to shit on you.
I'll be getting even lower, heading down to the Peruvian jungle to connect to the plants.